Yeah, hopefully. Yep. Jongi, Christopher, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, it's a privilege and pleasure for me to be with you this morning. Unfortunately, I missed the presentation yesterday evening, which I was personally deeply, deeply interested in from Kevin Campbell on artificial intelligence. And artificial intelligence links perfectly or is part from digitalization in healthcare. Everything that has been discussed yesterday and some of the things that we will share and discuss are in the best meaning of the word disruptive. They will change everything in medicine. Some glimpse of what this change could be or maybe can be discussed during and after my talk, but there's one key message that I would like to share with you up front. All this is going to be disruptive. In 10 years from now, we will see a completely different healthcare system with different infrastructures, different processes, different responsibilities. And we, as the smart ones, we are open to go into that direction and to change our mindsets, to change our infrastructures, and to change our processes to take the benefit of digital health and artificial intelligence to improve patient values. There may be some slow people, the other people that are not in this room, that miss that train, and they will be left out of the system. It's completely clear to me. So everything starts in the brain. The brain works best if it's a parachute. The parachute works best if it's open. And that's true for the brain as well. The brain needs to be open in order to accept and to work out potential benefits of change. These are my disclosures. My biggest disclosure is that I'm a strong supporter of European values. And I think it's very, very important in these days. Copy that slide and bring it out to the world. It's important. This slide was labeled in the past e-health and m-health may be disruptive. And I changed it to electronic health and mobile health technology is disruptive. And I would like to give you, as an introduction, some perspectives on the e-m healthcare market to prove what's going on in that field and to share with you the technology streams that are further close to us than just appearing at the horizon. You see the investments in 2000 and the revenues in 2013 and 2015 in electronic and mobile health. The growth is just breathtaking, and it shows that technology and processes are on their way to reach the market. We have seen significant improvement in the quality of healthcare, patient values, and patient outcome by using electronic and mobile health already. Most important, not in North America, not in Europe, but in geographies like Africa. I've taken these slides from Dr. Sengupta, who shared with us his perspective on E&M health recently at the European Heart House. And it shows the changes in flow of information and in medical care in Africa in different situations. The timelines will be completely different. The slide explains that 62% of all geographies in Africa are very, very difficult to reach from the healthcare system. It's difficult to be there physically. And it also shows that with 82% coverage of the African geography for mobile technology, you can simply go different pathways to inform people or inform patients about changes in the healthcare structure. And I think the numbers given there are really impressive, showing what you can do in the field of infectious diseases, malaria, showing what you can do in the field of pediatrics and gynecology to improve the quality of care. And all this is highly outcome relevant at this point in time. As the timelines in infectious diseases getting shorter and shorter, and the access of people to adequate medical care is getting faster and faster. So electronic and mobile health has already started to save lives in six numbers digits around the globe. Multiple technologies have been introduced in the field of mobile and electronic health. Wearables is one technology stream which is currently continues to be in the uprise. Some of you may have been in San Francisco, JP Morgan Technology Fair in medicine last week, where all these technologies were one of the most important technology streamlines. This was supplemented by the chess fair in Las Vegas, 50,000 people on electronic technologies, where healthcare covers a bigger and bigger portion. 24-25% of all technologies that were presented there have a link to healthcare. All these wearables and electronic and mobile health technologies are available at this point in time. Last year we had roughly 450 products at the market. It's going to be 1,000 products right now. My favorite is this one here, which allows you to measure automatically oxygen saturation in children, in babies, actually. Another quick look to the market and market development to substantiate further what I've shared with you. On the right side of the slide, you see the current investment stream in mobile telephone technology, and the blue bars depict the investments in electronic and mobile health, and it's getting bigger and bigger. And if I compare the technology streams that are on the road and the preparation of the healthcare system to take them, there's a huge, huge gap. We are not prepared, systemically not prepared, to take these technology streams. These are slides that I've taken from last year's presentation. Where? In Cupertino. It's the Apple presentation of this product, the Apple Watch, which is the first wrist wearable which is capable to record an electrocardiogram. And I will share with you why this is such a good example to show the disruptive potential of electronic and mobile health. Mintu Turakia is one of the promoters of digital medicine and artificial intelligence in North America. Mintu is the chair of the HRS ERA Digital Summit this year, actually, in San Francisco. I'm one of the co-chairs to set the program up. HRS and ERA will go with a digital summit every year now to promote the development of digital health and artificial intelligence in our sector, in arrhythmia research and clinics. And I would like to share with you the setup of the Apple Heart Studies, the workflow, and the numbers that are included in the Apple Heart Study is outstanding. This was published just a couple days ago in American Heart Journal, and it gives the structure and the concept of the Apple Heart Study. Is anybody in this room aware of how many patients or people, not patients, citizens will be included in Apple Heart? Yes, you may have read it, 500,000 people will be included in the Apple, have been included in the Apple Heart Study. And everything remotely, all communications remotely, everything with video conferencing and electronic signaling and messaging for that trial. This is the setup of the Apple Heart Study. This was done with the previous version of the iWatch not allowing direct recordings of the ECG, but working with so-called tachograms that can be detected and can be taken with the optical sensor that the watch already had. And the flow of the study is that you sign up for the Apple Heart study, that you get the informed consent, that you register, and everything you have to do is just to wear the Apple Watch. That's all that you have. Then it is connected to a virtual communication center with physicians. Everything is virtual. Nothing is in face-to-face contact. And once the watch indicates that there are rhythm disturbances or surrogates for rhythm disturbances, a patch will be sent out to you, and this patch will be worn, and this patch is capable to take an ECG either to confirm or to disconfirm that rhythm disturbances may be present in specific people. They are not patients at this point in time, and it's important to understand that. The healthcare system, or not the healthcare system, the healthcare technology has reached out to people, to citizens, to meet the people in preclinical stages of disease. And this is on one side important, and it's on the other side a systemic threat for us. If the healthcare industry reaches out to citizens, to people that do not have a disease but have risk factors, the next step can be that we are bridged, the traditional healthcare system is bridged, and that other infrastructures will be there to take that information and to take care. That's why it's so important that we as physicians interfere intensely into these processes. We are currently, to a certain extent, left out in the construction of processes along these lines. Yesterday, I was in Paris to discuss with European colleagues the 2020 ESC AF guidelines, and we will put a very strong point in the AF guidelines, ensuring that physicians need to be involved in this process. You have heard the talk yesterday from artificial intelligence. Content-wise, you don't need a physician in order to prove the diagnosis of atrial fibrillation. Artificial intelligence is, sorry Hans, but it's 4 times as strong as your brain in order to detect atrial fibrillation. And Hans has a great brain. We all know that. And it may be 6 to 8 times stronger than my brain. So all this is really important to take into awareness, because it's really disruptive. The whole communication is done via the Apple Watch. These are the inclusion rates. Look to the inclusion of 450,000 citizens into that trial. It's just amazing. The primary and secondary outcomes of the trial are easy to understand. It's simply a trial that should confirm that the detection of surrogates for arrhythmias and atrial fibrillation is feasible with this technology, and that this can be linked to non-traditional healthcare infrastructures in order to improve patient outcome. At the end of the day, with these technologies, there will be the question whether or not they improve heart outcomes, whether or not they reduce stroke, whether or not they reduce sudden cardiac death. Sudden cardiac death is not the topic of my talk, but think of a technology that monitors patients at risk for sudden cardiac death with a wrist wearable and is connected to GSM data transmission, so that patients can be identified, people can be identified the second they turn out to be patients in the situation of sudden cardiac death, and appropriate action can be automatically taken. This is the next step. I will share with you 2 next steps before we will come down to earth and see what we currently already have in the system. What is this? Anybody has an idea? This is a money purse. This is a money purse that you can inject yourself in order to keep on going your finances. This is a money purse for Bitcoins. You can load it, and you can just by walking by in the supermarket or in the bar or wherever you are to cash your bills with that. And it's something. It's micro technology that will also cover the field of medicine. I'm absolutely sure about that. The second next step is the contactless sensing of biological signals. That has a huge impact, as it has the capability for large-scale screening, and it has the risk that screening can be done as it is contactless, even with people that do not know that you screen them. One example how it works is the airports in China. When you immigrate into China at the airport, you pass by this camera which stands there. And I was for a long time thinking, why are they taking pictures? It's not a camera. It's a thermograph that checks whether your body temperature is above 38 degrees. It comes from the bird flu times to detect people that have high temperature in order to sort them out and to treat them differently. That is contactless sensing of biological signals. This has been taken from a cooperation that we currently have with Technical University in Leipzig. They have technologies with high resolution cameras that can detect automatically body movement, and from the detection of body movement, they can calculate the risk for chronic diseases in the ankles, in the joints, and wherever, whatever you would like to see. Muscle, it goes further. You can detect surrogates for the ECG. You can detect surrogates for oxygen saturation and even blood pressure, contactless with high-resolution cameras. Imagine that you have such a camera in your intensive care unit. You bring a patient in. You do not have to connect the patient to anything. You simply put him underneath or her underneath the camera, and you have the biological data of the patient online. This is a program of pain detection in patients that are willingless, that cannot communicate. Babies, patients after surgery with artificial ventilation that cannot communicate anymore. And with these high-resolution cameras, you can detect surrogates for pain development in these patients, and you can adjust the medication with analgetics accordingly. Everything needs an infrastructure. We don't have an infrastructure yet in the healthcare system to take all these technologies. It's free floating, free falling. We are not prepared in the hospitals, not in private practice, not in the hospital, not in the general healthcare system. It's a significant gap, and it's a significant risk for all of us. Coming back to Earth and looking to companies like Biotronic that have marched into this field with their technology of cardiac implants, building up networks that can be connected to other digital technologies in order to stay in control of data flow and transform data, big amounts of data, into quality of care. This is the Biotronic system that has been set up for the home monitoring platform and allows a connection of people, patients, physicians, and other partners in the healthcare sector. And I would like to share with you the potential benefits and the connection to artificial intelligence that this system offers. These are the data from InTime. How are you doing with time, Pio? It's good? Okay. These are the data from InTime showing that with remote monitoring you can save lives. The message is clear from the InTime trial, and it has been substantiated from the meta-analysis of the trials that use the same technology as depicted on the right side. It's the only remote technology that has the capability to save lives and has shown to be life-saving. From the workflow of InTime and from the insights that we gained from the results of the study, we have developed SOPs, so standard operating procedures, and these standard operating procedures are fed into the system. That means when a certain event occurs, according which indicates worsening of the clinical situation or risk for the patient, it's an automatically process that the SOP triggers and induces medical action. One of the key problems of remote monitoring, traditionally in many technologies, is and was that measuring a biological signal does not change anything. You measure a signal, it does not change the quality of care. Only the connection of the biological signal to a process that changes treatment makes a difference. So you have to change something. And this is the approach that Biotronic, with a group of physicians, has been taken to enter the field. Connect the technology to standard operating procedures that change the quality of care. It is difficult, especially in the, for example, German healthcare system, where you have sectors that are not optimally connected, the outpatient sectors, the GP sector, the cardiologist sector, the inpatient sector, to connect all these sectors in order to gain the benefit. Flow of information is important, and Biotronic has come up with a very, very smart solution to get access to all key players involved, including the patient, because the patient has to be implemented and has to be educated to become a valuable element in the chain of treatment. This summarizes the platform that is highly automatic, works with automatic data generation, automatic data transmission, automatic data analysis, and automatic induction of medical processes according to the SOPs. All this will be connected to remote patient management via the internet. I never understood why the German physician associations were so reluctant to accept video support of patients. It does not make sense at all. It's simply based on the preservation of claims. We don't want to give it away. It's not linked to patient values, because there is no doubt that it gains huge values for the patient if the patient can connect to a physician in 5 minutes via the internet with a face-to-face conversation. It generates huge value, and we have to stop to block these developments. It simply does not make sense. If we block these developments, this will happen. It will happen without us. Then there will be other people that take care of the quality of care in the field. Is it safe? The implant files that all of you are aware of, I'm sure about that, have also made a strong point for implants and cardiac implants with respect to data safety program. You remember House of Cards and the reprogramming of the ICD, the remote reprogramming. And so send grandma a shock. Is that something which is really in the field, or is it something which is just a nightmare from the movies? It's something in between. If you go to the internet, you will find videos that show how remote monitored pacemakers can be hacked and can be interfered. It's really interesting. The system that we talk about is absolutely safe, as it has nothing is absolutely safe, but it's the safest available, as it works with individual security codes that are a lot more difficult to gain access to. So, not to spoil all the timelines, I would like to share with you my final thoughts. Digital healthcare has already changed and improved medical communication pathways, diagnostics, and treatment pathways. Implants, wearables, injectables, contact loss biomonitoring technology will allow continuous monitoring of various biological signals. The connection to artificial intelligence will be disruptive for the healthcare system. Again, the call, be open and be prepared. It will happen with or without us. Algorithms will support and partially replace traditional diagnostic and treatment pathways. There's no doubt about it. And will improve quality of care, support patient values for a better and longer life, the development and installation of monitoring systems that bridge traditional sectors of the healthcare system will further improve the quality of care. And last not least, this is also an important call for the legal authorities involved, for the European Commission. They need to be closer to these developments to regulate this process. Legal and data safety aspects are currently unsolved and require our strong attention. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Gerd. Are there questions from the floor? Then I would like to start. The whole field that you showed us is wide. It reaches from wearables, lifestyle technologies, into technologies for really sick patients, and the border zone overlaps. And I fully agree with you that this is something we need to pay attention to, and we need to shape in order that others don't do this for us. But if I imagine that I'm a GP, I'm a physician, and I hear this and I see this, I feel a little bit overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And I would ask myself, so what shall I do? I cannot equip all my patients with Apple Watches.
No.
So what would you recommend the audience who is really openly willing to engage with these thoughts and pathways? What would be the first step to do?
The first recommendation is maybe a little bit surprising to you, is go to Amazon. Go to Amazon and order for €6 a Reclam 60 pages book on the role of digital and artificial intelligence in the healthcare system. It's €6. I did it quite a while ago. You read it in one evening, and it gives you the basic sets of knowledge that you need. You don't have to be an expert, but it's important to understand that. How the people that develop these systems think. They are different from us. This is the first step that improves. That gives a solid ground to think what you can do in the system. Then, as a second step, and it's a brain opener, as it shows the tremendous opportunities that these systems have in the future, and it also shows that this is unstoppable. It's absolutely unstoppable. We are either in or we are out. Then the next step would be that I would, from a GP perspective or cardiology perspective, step by step, move closer into that field. It's the small steps that, at the end of the day, ensure that the likelihood that you're in increases. I would start with the technologies that I have. For example, home monitoring technology. The patients are there. The system is there. It's easy to install. You can connect with other physicians. You can connect with hospitals and healthcare centers and work yourself step by step into the field. And then I would very carefully monitor the market for opportunities to go into additional fields. It's the first step, if I would be a GP, would be that I would sign up for one of the video platforms in order to offer my patients video consultations. And I know that there are still absolutely not understandable legal barriers in the system, and this is something that you can do in 5 hours. Sign up for one of the systems that offer you video connection to patients. It's very easy. We have started at Heart Center Leipzig quite a while ago to work with these systems. The patient acceptance is very, very high. They really appreciate that. For atrial fibrillation ablation follow-up, they don't drive like 90 minutes. to come to you and wait 4 hours in the hospital. You simply call them, you chat to them. They can upload the ECG data that they have taken from their home physician. You talk to them, and it's done in 15 minutes. So that would be the second step. So Amazon first step, and video platform second step.
Dietmar.
Well, I agree totally with you that there is no way we need remote care, as you say. My fear is this. If you do it like with an Apple Watch or anything like that, you produce tons of meaningless data. Meaningless. Somebody says, oh, I have 3 minutes of atrial fibrillation. So what now? And in the next step, you produce really tons of meaningless doctor contacts. Even with telecommunication, this is really overwhelming because there's so many events in this on the iPhone that you cannot interpret. And if you have 500,000 citizens, I bet you will find hundreds. You have ventricular extrasystole, non-sustained VT. And what do you do with this? Tons of meaningless data, and you have to handle this.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And we have to be very, very careful not to allow potential harm that can be induced by the system. But I will give you an example of different technology that have proven that different technology results in different workflow and different outcome. We have, and I come back to cardiac implants, we have a technology that was capable to send out patient alerts by acoustic signals. The DOT-HF trial, you know the DOT-HF trial, you have an ICD, and when the impedance of your lungs changed so significantly that fluid guts up, there was a signal, and the patients ran to the hospital. So hospitalization went up into the air, but outcome did not change. On the other side, we have smart technology like multi-parameter monitoring of the patients where thousands of data. Data density is 1,000 times as high in the multi-parameter monitoring system as compared to the technology that was used in DOT-HF. But the impact on the system was significantly more focused and significantly less poisoned by an unnecessary physician-doctor contacts. We have proven that with the home monitoring platform, and the difference is that it was connected to a very well working electronic folder that clearly indicated what is relevant and what may not be relevant. It's a risk, I fully agree, but I count on electronic data management and artificial intelligence to overcome this.
Well, this is true, but there you have a clear clinical question. If I have a clear clinical question and I try this to solve this with remote control, I'm fully with you, But if you spread this over not patients, but over people, what crazy events will happen? You see, maybe people will be set on anticoagulation because they have 3 minutes atrial fibrillation. Yeah. The doctor says, you have atrial fibrillation.
Yeah.
And I feel that we have not the knowledge really to handle this, to handle these events, these meaningless events.
Yeah, it's an important call into the healthcare system to handle this with care. And with smart handling. But it's a risk, I agree.
It's only one aspect. It's one technology, it's Apple Watch, it's one signal. It's not the whole picture, you know? It's lifetime to medicine, our implants, etc. So I think we should not hang all of this on this one point. But we have to carry on for the sake of time. Dietmar, I have to take the word from you. As one short question, one short answer.
It's one very short question, Gerd. You know that the German the German Physician Society at their meeting last year in Erfurt 2018 decided to facilitate the remote control. There is a law in Germany which prevents the remote control of patients. Do you think this has an impact on the development in Germany for the next years?
It will come no matter what some of the stakeholders in the system vote for, because it has to come. The support of the physician societies to go into that direction clearly will have an income and will promote these technology streams. And when we meet next year, I'm sure that at least 25% of all physicians in this room will be on remote communication with patients, and it's good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very good.